let's put on a show, Jake. Let's get ready to do some radio.
I'm ready.
I heard you adjusting your microphone. Diving in. Well, here we go. Been 16 years since the Sonics played. And it looks like the rumors are flying fast and furious. We see it in Las Vegas or Seattle. What's going to get the team as the NBA expands? Pretty good chance now, as more people are talking about this, that NBA coming back to Seattle. I know, Jake, you worked for the Sonics.
And yeah, I was in the NBA for 4 years. People don't know that about me.
It's about the average age. That's about the average amount of time somebody does spend in the NBA.
So, yeah, that's why I said it.
Yeah, yeah, that's good for you. You know, not high, not low in that one. So good for you.
Yeah. I was a ball boy in the NBA. I wasn't on the court per se, unless somebody slipped and got sweat everywhere, in which case I was front and center underneath the hoop. I was a ball boy. I would love to see the Sonics back in town. This is very exciting. Samantha Holloway, she's the co-owner of the Kraken. She sent out this email that got people really excited. She sent an email out to season ticket holders and said, watch for a parent brand that will umbrella the Kraken brand and prepare for other big opterunities. People think that they are talking about bringing an NBA franchise back. So I guess her and her dad have been very vocal about this. Her dad owns the team.
Yeah.
He's the majority shareholder with, along with Jerry Bruckheimer, actually, of Hollywood fame. And they have said in recent interviews over the last few years, they would love to own a team. It just comes down to whether or not the NBA wants to expand and create more teams. And that would, you know, that's kind of the big issue.
Do they want to keep splitting the pot when it comes to TV and ticket sales? Well, Todd Lygwacki, who was really instrumental in building the new arena, he wanted to make sure it had three things. One, the best sound for concerts, which people say far and away it does, because his brother knows all about that. Plus also a fan experience unrivaled anywhere in the world. You get that if you ever go to a Kraken game. The way the players come through, the whole experience of it. Todd is always like, first and foremost, what is going to be the culture and how do we connect to the fan? And then he also wanted to make sure that thing could easily become a basketball arena. Adam Silver came, toured the place. Todd gave him the tour, showed him everything, and Silver's like, whoa, this place is great, great.
Well,
so it looks like everything's all set for them. Some of the problems they have is that attendance has been decreasing at NBA games, and viewership is decreasing as well. But I guess the numbers are still high enough that it still makes sense financially.
Do you think that there's any, I mean, like you mentioned with the Climate Pledge Arena, the fan experience is fantastic. And you know, when I was there, when it was Key Arena.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I still call it the Key Arena.
I do too.
I believe the other crap. Yeah, it's too woke and too PC for me, but go ahead.
Well, mine is just like, you know, it's a little of that, but also just because I was there so many nights. It was the Key Arena. It was so great. It is amazing though, when you go into that arena and you look down, you see how much, what they actually were able to accomplish in that space. Because when Chris Hansen, you remember Chris Hansen, the investor, tech guy, or not tech guy, money guy, when he came in 10 years ago, or actually, what was this, 8 years ago last week, this article was talking about the Seattle City Council quashed a bid by Hansen's group to build a new arena in SoDo. That was kind of the big thing. Like, maybe a new team could come to town. They might be able to acquire a team, but where are they going to play? Hansen was going to build an entire new arena. They just went in and, you know, they just went in and just dug with Key Arena. And so I think that was one of the reasons it's so great that they were able to reuse that space, because there's not a lot of space downtown to have a team. And now, you know, it is the perfect venue for an NBA team. So
it's the best arena in the country right
now.
Until the Clippers open their new one, which is happening next year, it can't be touched. The hockey games there are phenomenal.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
Wow,
it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
The problem is, here's a question for you guys, though. Do you think that Seattle, they're right now in this really unfortunate position, we're here. We are in this unfortunate position where we're now the thing that is dangled in front of other teams who are talking about moving their team if they don't get new arenas, or moving their team if they don't get better deals. Seattle has become this thing where we're like, all right, well, we could go to Seattle or we could go to Las Vegas.
It's a done deal.
You say that, but Chris Hansen.
Wow, put Joe on record.
This is
done deal.
There's so much money. The Supersonics jersey sales are still among the highest, and higher than some active teams right now. Like, it's such a popular brand. It's going to make so much money for the NBA.
Are they even going to be called the Sonics?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Joe must be in the boardroom.
Everybody, gee whiz.
Listen to Gary. Gary fast here.
Hang on a second. Here's Gary.
I know what's going to happen. I think it's going to be Vegas and Seattle. I'm kind of positively sure of that. And, yeah, it's got to do. I think the NBA has to do it the right way. I think Adam Silver was doing a great job at being a commissioner and getting the owners to agree to Seattle needs a basketball team. It shouldn't have ever been taken away from them in the first place. So I think it's going to be close. You know, a lot of things got to happen this summer in the NBA. You know, you got to get the TV deal done. We got to get a lot of things going on. But I think a lot of the owners are on board. You know what I'm saying? I think they want to expand to go to 32 teams from 30. It wouldn't hurt nobody. You just got to move somebody into the East. If it be two West Coast teams to come Minnesota. Over here, they just stay in the West, and they just move one of the West Coast teams to the East. It'll be easy. You know, it'll be easy to do it, and I think it's coming. And I think everybody's going to be very happy when it comes, and Seattle will be one of them names to get another basketball team.
When they do play, if Joe so, sure they will.
It's a done deal, John. It's a total done deal.
Or will it be? I know that. Yeah, that's your church quote. Right. Or will it be basketball, or will it be the crap that we see now, where you're allowed to show up for 80% of your work? You can, you know, sit out if you want to for personal reasons or load management.
Oh, come
on! You don't have
on.
To pass the ball. Hold, oh, Joe,
come on,
Joe. How about passing the ball? You want to try that?
Here
you not want to pass the ball? No, you just want to shoot everything from a three? Everything is about social media. Everything is – listen, do you think they're playing basketball the way they played basketball in the 90s or
here's
even
a question.
The 80s?
Here's a question for your question, John. Do you think
– double question.
Double question. Do we have a double question, Sounder? Do you think
– Don't that, call for stuff. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Do you think that fans are even really interested in showing up for the games? Because, like you were saying earlier, the fan experience online, I mean, like the fan experience on your TVs is so, so, so good. Just like movies, to get somebody out of their house to go see a movie takes a lot more effort than it used to because the fan experience at home is so good. And now with basketball, too, I mean, you can watch different angles. You can watch.
Yeah, but here's the problem with it, though, Jake, is that fan viewership has declined as well. It's at 1.5 million. The highest it had been. It was when the Jordan years, right, and the LeBron James. But overall, you have a saturation, right? You have 10,000 college basketball games. You have about 2,000 NBA games to watch. And people aren't watching as much as they were watching before. So the numbers have actually been declining over the years as far as TV viewership. Attendance is about where it was. It's dropped a little bit as well. But people don't want to spend the money. Drive downtown, go down there, pay $50 for parking, get your car broken into, and then go in there, pay for the ticket. And Joe, so... Don't. All in on this. I don't think you're going to be.
You're sullying my good news story.
Oh, no, I'm just letting. I just, you know, listen, how about a different perspective on it? Really? Oh, it's coming to Seattle. Great. But, you know, how many people will go, right? And the trend is that it's declining in viewership. It's declining in general fan appreciation because the ticket prices are so high. And by the way, if they don't want to play that day, well, I went to the Trailblazers game. I took a ride. We sat there. Steph Curry, just didn't play playing that day. Kevin Durant played well, but like, if you don't want to play, don't play.
Oh, you went to the was it Trailblazers Warriors?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to see Kevin. I want seven Kevin Durant and Curry. I wanted to see play. But listen, the basketball, the quality of the game is not as good as it used to be, right? Now they turn it on because they got the playoffs. But the rest of the time, there's no defense. Just run down. Nobody wants to cover anybody. I think the only person ever playing defense is Matisse Thybulle from Eastside okay. Catholic, who went to the U, then went to Sixers, and now he's at the Trailblazers making like $5 million a game. And the reason he does well is because he plays great defense. But just overall, the quality of the game has, I think, deteriorated.
I have stats to throw at you. If we didn't have Jonathan Cho on hold, we could really.
All right, all right. Okay, go to Cho. He's a troublemaker. Andrew, Jonathan Cho, the troublemaker. Cho running away from the peaceful protest yesterday, trying to kick his rear end. Hey, Cho, I saw the video. Did you actually yell back at somebody, like, come on, fatso, or something
we
like
have
that?
We have that
clip. Huh? Cho?
I mean, just to be clear, I said fat boy. So, yeah. I did yell back. This guy's a loser. I mean, you guys are straight-up grown adults, 40-year-olds. They're not students. These are total losers who are just trying to destabilize America, Seattle. I mean, it's just the chaos. You know, that's all it is.
Yeah, yeah. So when you're down there, they know who you are. So they look out for you. What was the sort of scrum that had to happen? How did it all start? I saw some guy with an American flag, and there was a giant guy there who I think he got punched in the eye. But I was like, oh, that's the guy you'd want to be in there scrumming with. He looked huge. And somehow in there, you broke in and then ran away and taunted the guy. What happened there?
Well, look, the whole day started off, you know, I was reporting for Turning Point USA. It was a Charlie Kirk event. Yes. And, you know, as you know, what's been going on, I don't know how much mainstream local media has really been covering the situation on the ground. But, you know, at this Hamas encampment that's taken over the Quad, they're only allowing certain students in, certain media that's favorable to this mm-hmm. cause. Jewish students aren't being allowed into this place. And it's an extremely hostile and dangerous environment right now. So, of course, I go in there to cover what's happening. And I'm followed by my security guards and my photog. And right away, the Antifa folks spot me. Now, let me be very clear. They have taken over an entire tent. And there's a sign outside this tent that says, "Death to Fascists." And when I was recording that, not one, two, but 10, 20 Antifa folks, all blacked up, wearing black armor and helmets, spotted me and started chasing me. Of course, I'm still recording. I'm backpedaling this whole time. I want to be very clear. Right. We did not instigate, okay? I want to be very clear for the record. We're just trying to do our jobs as reporters. Then, of course, I have my security with me, thankfully, and they got my back. These guys were attacking us. Mm-hmm. They're throwing punches. And look, I've been trained in my mind to always defend myself, but I'm not going to, again, be the aggressor. So I just simply try to get away from this hot situation, and you saw the video. I was running the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, here's a little bit of
Jonathan Cho. Johnny.
You know we know where you live, buddy.
Jonathan Cho.
It's 1-6.
Jonathan Cho. Johnny.
Guy's breathing heavily into the
microphone. Oh, baby, we're Johnny.
Why do you guys always travel in packs, huh? Never one-on-one?
Oh, we have comrades. We have friends unlike you, Jonathan.
All soy boys. Oh, gosh. These are grown adults, by the way, not even students.
So what's the deal? I you know, there's new evidence that has come out. Who's funding all these organizations? The Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago had a piece that about a year ago, they were getting formally trained by ex-Black Panther activists as to how to organize this stuff. This is not about Israel. It really is anti-capitalism. It's Marxist groups of people, a bunch of 40-year-old unemployed guys that cut up garbage can lids and use those as shields. Like, what are we not getting in the news that you see in there, Cho? What's the news missing or intentionally not reporting?
Yeah, and I can tell you right now, I still have many friends in local Seattle media, and they're saying, Cho, you know, you're hitting all the angles that we can't, because, again, what you just said, John, the fact of the matter is this is being fueled by a bunch of socialists, communists, and Marxists. That's what all the protests have been about since October 7th here in Seattle. And very few people are reporting on those details because it's not brand safe. It's extremely controversial and tied in with all these groups. Of course, you have the Antifa Black Bloc types. And it's just a volatile subject matter. And that's what I've been reporting on the whole time. And that's exactly what's happening here. This encampment is no longer about pro-Palestine. Of course, you have some students who care about that cause, and they're here trying to support that. But again, these outside agitators, you know, I'm starting to recognize the same people who I saw wrecking Seattle back in 2020 during the height of the BLM riots. When you start seeing the right. same professional agitators, you know that there's something else going on here. Of course, this past week, Politico also reporting George Soros, along with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, in sort of in a tertiary way, funding nonprofits that are now backing these professional activists here.
Hey, John, I was watching this other story or reading this other story about one of these guys on the campus at Columbia University. And it was just highlighting the difference between the person who is protesting, quote, protesting, And one of the janitorial staff, the guy was making $19 an hour as a janitor at Columbia. The guy that he was trying to stop from vandalizing the library that they had overtaken, he was 40 years old. His parents were multimillionaires. He was a trust fund kid. He himself owned like a $3.5 million house in some tasteful neighborhood in New York. And I'm just wondering, like, are you seeing a lot of these guys out here? Are any of these students? I mean, how many of these are actually students? The ones doing the violence, how many of them are actually students at UW? Or are they, like you say, just totally outside actors?
Oh, I'm confident to say this. I'll put my reputation on the line right now. The vast majority of the Antifa folks dressed up in Black Bloc are not students. Let me repeat, they are not students. They're, again, outside agitators who have clearly seen this as an opportunity to take advantage of a volatile situation and destabilize the situation even further.
So what does UW do about that then? Like, how do they get in there and make sure it's a safe place for their students if these guys have kind of come in and taken over?
And that's the real story here right now. What you didn't see, you know, reported a lot yesterday was the fact that you have zero cops near the quad. They've been all ordered to patrol the perimeter because, again, most of the people here were the folks behind the whole defund the police movement, and it quote-unquote triggers them, right? So the police now presence is more of kind of a triggering thing, so they don't want the cops there to make the situation more complicated. And when you need them, they're not around. You know, even after our melee, they didn't show up after the fact. It was, you know, after this all happened. So when you go into this situation, you need to know you're on your own. We've reached out to UW officials, and the leaders keep saying they're closely monitoring the situation. That's code for we have no plan. They've been caught with their pants down again. And again, this is just an untenable situation.
Here, I'm going to thank you, and I'm going to play the final cut. This is of you. This is like high school, like grade school recess. You running away from this guy and then over your shoulder. Jonathan Cho, I'll leave you with this.
Here we go.
All right.
Hey, get that on film, Jonathan.
Come on.
It's you running. I'm chasing you now.
Come on, fat boy.
come on, fat boy. All right. Oh, my God, what they pay you to do. All right, Jonathan Cho from the Discovery Institute. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. You're a troublemaker. You big troublemaker over there. That's what you are. Thanks, Jonathan Cho. Nicely done. All right. Yeah. That's a rant song, but we're borrowing it for Cho as well. Here we go. Running to us. Good, good, good for you. 9 out of 10 dentists recommended. You could also come in through the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. 1-888-973-5476. There's Teeny over there, ready to go. Here. Oh, she's going again for the employee. All right, Teeny. Jake, she's going for employee of the week again for the, I think, 12th time. So
good for her.
Yes.
Good luck.
Good. She's trying to set another record. And speaking of records, Dr. Segway, David Rush, a man who I have to say I used to just silently hate in my heart, but now I'll say it into the microphone. Mr. Rush, with all of your Guinness World Book of Records, you are living my life, my friend, because that's my one accomplishment I want in this world is to be in the book. I got to get in the book. I've tried 3 times, and here you are flaunting all of your world records. How many do you have now?
I have broken over 300 in total, and I currently hold 167.
Look it up in the book.
Yeah, how about that? Wow. Let me ask you something. When you were a kid, did you used to read that book all the time?
Oh, you know, I read the book and I watched the shows and I thought, man, I wish I could be in the Guinness Book of World Records. Never believe me, I ever could.
It was like the only book I ever read in grade school. It's like, pull that book out and just look at all the guys with the long fingernails and the tall guy and the little guy in the little top hat and stuff like that. Jake, you ever wanted to be in the World Book of Records?
Well, of course. And as you were saying that, I was just thinking that was such a huge part of my childhood was those Guinness Book of World Records. And I would read I would always check them out and I would get them. I think I had 3 or 4 of them. Like, do they still publish those? Do they still make those books,
oh,
or is it all online?
Year,
oh yes,
they publish the book. There's about 4,000 of the book every year. Plus, they do all the videos and YouTube and Instagram and TikTok now.
Right,
and then there's the records on the website too. And then they've actually got a database of records that you have to have an account to even see. It's free to create that account, but how exclusive this club is. There's like 69,000 of them.
What was your first world record? Like, obviously you've continued the tradition and you're very good at it now, but what was the first thing that you set your mind to beating?
So it was a 2-year effort to try and break my first Guinness World Records title from the time I said, I want to break a record till I broke it. And I was working in tech at the time because they did this promote STEM education. And it was going to be the fastest half mile run while juggling. And I got into the sport of juggling actually when I came out to Seattle to run the half marathon, I think in 2005, ran the Seattle half marathon while juggling. So I spent about 2 years training in 2013 for the fastest half mile run. I ran about 2,000 miles while juggling. And at the end of that, I ended up hurting my knee. And so I never made an attempt. And at that point, you're like, do I give up? Say, hey, it's never going to happen. Or do I have a growth mindset and say, no, I am going to break this Guinness World Records title or a world records title. So I pivoted to practice for longest duration blindfolded juggling. Because I realized I just spent like 200 hours doing the basic 3-ball cascade. So in October of 2015, I put on a blindfold and juggled for 6 minutes and 34 seconds, breaking my first world record.
You were in good company because Joe, our producer, he helped a friend have the most amount of T-shirts put on in a single. How long was it, Joe?
It wasn't timed, so it was just wearing the most T-shirts at once, and we set the record with 155.
This is a world record?
That one's been broken, though, now.
Yeah, no, it got broken. We did it. We really capitalized on it. We went on David Letterman and Regis and Kelly and had it for probably, I think, a year, and now it's been broken, you know, countless times.
Yeah, because I'm going to wear that many T-shirts next weekend and run a half marathon.
Good luck.
Because here you are. This is after hours of trying. This is David finally setting the Guinness World Book of Records. We're putting T-shirts on, fired from a T-shirt cannon.
Come on! After several hours of practice and hours of official attempts, we finally took this record down. Sometimes the records are easy, sometimes they look easy and end up being way harder than I expect. This is one of those records, but Jake practiced hard. He figured out how to dial up the pressure, get the angle consistent, and we crush it.
I got 5.
Yeah, David, can I just, it seems Andrew, who runs the board, kind of makes fun of this. All these records just seem to be getting weirder and weirder. Like, you know, most amount of pages read of a Dickens novel while changing the fan belt on an old 66 pickup. It's like they're getting so obscure that it seems different than what the book used to be.
Yeah, that's a common misconception. But the very first book published had super weird records in it as well. I mean, it's always been weird.
Yeah,
David, are you a married man?
I am. Yes, I've got a wife. We met at MIT while I was getting my electrical engineering degree, and she was getting her mechanical engineering degree. She works as a mechanical engineer at HP, and I could not do what I do without the support of my wife.
Well, yeah, no kidding.
And now family. I've got, you know, an 8 and 5 year old boys and a one year old girl.
Where do you have the time to break all these records? You said it took you 2 years to juggle blindfolded. You've done 167 of these now. Are you the best time manager in the world? How do you do it?
You know, it takes a concerted effort to make it happen. And most of this happened while I was working full time in tech. I was a product manager at a firm in Boise making wireless routers. And in 2020, we had the largest technology unicorn exit in Idaho's history. So I was doing this while I was working in tech. It was, you know, lunchtimes. I was practicing, lifting weights, evenings, weekends, you know, doing the paperwork at night when the kids are in bed. And it's just a matter of you find time for the things that are important. And I watched a little less TV.
What's the next one for you? Is the T-shirt thing again? Or are you going to run? You're going to run a half marathon or something with a whole bunch of T-shirts on? Is that the next one? Because
So my 2024 goal. You set a goal. I love. I'm a big fan of goals and pursuing them. Yes. So in 2021, my goal was to break 52 Guinness World Records in 52 weeks. And I was successful and did, you know, the tour of with, you know, Tamron Hall and live with Kelly and Mark and like afterwards. This year, my goal is to hold the most concurrent world records. So I've broken it. It's been approved by Guinness and nobody else has broken it. And I'm a number 2 in the world right now, and I'll be number 1 in the world by about June, maybe July, depending on how fast the records are approved.
Who are you gunning for? Who's number 1? I'm sure we all know it, but just remind us who it is. I can't remember.
I don't know if you do. Silvio Saba out of Italy is the guy.
Saba. Yeah, for sure.
Tom. Yes, of course. Ugh. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm going back after all the records I've broken previously, including the most T-shirts worn for half marathon. Last time I did it, I wore 111 T-shirts. It's broken twice since I broke it with 120, 127. So next weekend, I'm going to try to put on 150 T-shirts, which takes about 45 minutes, as you know, and then run a half marathon.
You know, it's like the 4-minute mile. Once somebody does it, then everybody goes, oh, it can be done. I can do it.
But Joe has a word of warning for you, Joe. Tell him about the fact that the guy you were with died.
So Haynes sponsored the reattempt that we did on Regis and Kelly, and these were unstretched, untested shirts. And yeah, I think we got to about 110, and the EMTs had to come cut him out because he was about to die.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah,
really about to die?
Yeah, I got video of it. It's great.
But a good TV though.
Yeah, it was dramatic.
David, you ever think you're risking your life for something like this?
You know, this one's a concerning one because heat is an issue. Last time my hands swelled up because I lost circulation in them, but I was wearing 111 t-shirts and still ran the half. It took me almost 3 hours, but I ran the half marathon. So this one, if it's too hot, I'm a little concerned, but I have people running with me. I'll have ice bags and, you know, spray bottles to spray the arms and legs, try to keep me cool.
It's amazing.
And I assume they cut you out of them. You don't hand them to your wife and say, hey, could you do my laundry, right?
No, you've got to take them off undamaged to count them to count for Guinness. Because you have to put them on, get to the end, take them off one at a time, count them, and show that they're undamaged to qualify as a Guinness World Record.
Oh, wow. Well, change David Rush, rules, we wish you the best. Continue with your crazy life. And hopefully you're number one and beat that guy in Italy, whatever his name was again.
Saba.
You should go for the most amount of consecutive world records, 52 in 52 weeks. Thank you, David Rush. Get back to work, whatever it is that you're doing there in Idaho.
Put that in your book.
Hey, John Jay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. There he goes. We said David Rush from Idaho, the guy who's got the most amount of Guinness World Records. He's going for another one running. Was it a half marathon, 13.1 miles with a whole bunch of t-shirts on. I tried to get the Guinness World Records senior year high school. It was most amount of jumping jacks in 1 hour. It's now like 4,700 and some. I would go down at before dinner, go downstairs to the basement and do them. And
what'd you get to?
We had to do 70. It was about like 77 a minute. That was the record at the time. So I'm down there, and my father comes down and goes, what the hell are you doing? I go, oh, I'm going to break the World Book of Records. But I was trying to count real fast. And then he says, you can't do it. Just because he's like, what you do?
Just tiring yourself out, stealing all your breath.
Just counting them, right. Didn't give it no love. And he said, don't do it by that. Just do it by like, go for 1 hour and just keep trying to go as fast as you can for 1 hour. And I, like, after about 3 weeks, I gave up on it. But yeah, 77. Now the record is 79 in a minute. So in 1 hour, you do 79 a minute to get to the world record of like 4,000 or something like that.
Can I ask you something about your jumping jacks experience?
Mm.
Do you think that your dad knew that you would not be successful and he still lets you go down? Because like my kids run around, they're always like, I'm the fastest man in the world, the fastest boy in the world. And I know they're not actually the fastest boy in the world, but I encourage them to try. Do you think your dad knew that you as a, and how old were you? 17, 18?
Yes, somewhere in there. Yeah.
18. You're 18, you're doing your jumping jacks.
Yeah.
For 3 weeks. It's a weird thing to do, but you're down there. What was he, is he like, all right, just staying out of trouble. He could be doing a lot of other stuff. He's down there just doing his jumping jacks.
No, when he climbed the stairs and went back up to the kitchen, he says, I found him downstairs. The idiot's down there jumping around.
Oh, you got to do it in your dad voice.
Hey, even like this. I found him. He's downstairs. The idiot's down there jumping around. That's what he says.
He's gonna set a record.
No, none of that. He's like, hey, you know, what are you doing? Go cut the grass. You want to set a record? Cut the grass. All that stuff. So I tried to do pull-ups, jumping jacks, most amount of water skiers pulled behind one boat for one nautical mile.
One of these is a lot like the other.
Successful at none of these, right? You're not in the books.
Thanks, Jake. Thanks.
Well, no,
thanks,
I mean, like, how did you get the ski one together? That's a big undertaking.
Nickel Brothers Boat Building. We got a boat from this guy in Alaska. He sent it down to Nichols Brothers for them to work on it. And Nichols was like, hey, you know what? I think I could weld a couple of things onto the back of the thing. And then we got Joan Soder to donate money to Learning Disabilities Association, like 2 pennies for every bottle they sold. And water skiers came in from all around the country.
Wow.
To try to have 120 water skiers pull behind one boat. When you swung the arms off the back of the bow of the boat, it was 300 feet long. and we had like 80 guys on one side or 60 guys on one or 50 on one side, 50 on the other. And then we dropped back. We had 20 behind. When the boat didn't have enough power to pull us up out of the water, we were all flying. It looked like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan. People are flying. Oh, my God.
That must have been tremendously disappointing. That's a big undertaking to fail at.
Oh, I felt bad. You said people came all the way in from Florida. They're like, is that it? I'm like, we have to untangle the ropes now. Which took like 2 hours.
I guess we go home. Is there a video of this? Can we see a video somewhere? Like, you must have.
Oh, helicopters were hovering.
Oh, helicopters.
Como and Kang were, yeah, because they wanted to see. We sent out a press. It was at 8:30 in the morning. It was like October 7th. 2000, I think, was the year we tried to do it. The helicopters were like hovering, and as soon as they waited about like 2 minutes, and we saw us struggling. The boat was cavitating. It was pulling a milfoil, big plops of black and white smoke pouring out the top of the thing. And the guy that owned the boat had a bit of a drinking problem. He's like, what are they going to do with the boat? Like, he didn't even know the night before. He's like, what are you doing? And the lawyer was sitting there, and he's like, yeah, you agreed to this. I didn't agree to this.
What do you think you're welding on 300 feet of, like, rope tie for? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think a buddy of mine still has all the ropes.
Also come in handy.
Yeah.
Most amount of ropes stored in one guy's garage for more than 20 years. Yeah. Tangled in a giant knot. Yeah. You can still try it again.
Put that in your book.
Yeah, but a lot of stuff going in your book.